Messina ha già vinto il giro nel 2013. Gli applausi sono per Vincenzo Nibali.
Mia ne sceballo, mamma mia, non forza ci, che mi manca la cunella per potere compari, che mi manca la cunella che potere compari, e lo prevederisco io, la cunella la porto io, lo prevederisco io, la cunella la porto io, dindo e dindo a, dindo e dindo a.
Oh. Hang on a minute, I'm supposed to be the doom and gloom merchant here, and Daniel's stealing my thunder already. And you're only saying this because you're not going to be there, and you're just trying to put basically the frighteners on Rich and I, knowing that we don't speak any Italian. I'm way behind with my Learn Italian podcast that I've been listening to. So far, I can just about check into a hotel, I think. So we should be fine, eh, Rich?
We're still in Folkestone. We don't know that you can check into a hotel. I think the proof of the pudding will be in the eating.
I am looking forward to eating a lot of pudding. That's certainly true.
So, dear listener, we are here in the bus with Filippo Pozzato. He tried to win today. He was not able to win, but for me it's the same. My love for you, for him, is the same, even bigger.
Thank you very much. We better leave before there are kisses exchanged.
Grazie.
Lionel, this is extraordinary. Even by Giro standards, this is a true casino, a true mess.
It is, really. I mean, we've been sent all across the Dolomites, down the farm tracks and country roads, and now we've got to take a cable car up to the finish. And there's no indication in the road book that this is what we had to do to get from the start to the finish. Had we known, it's highly likely we would have got moving a bit earlier, wouldn't we?
We've got a carabiniere come speak to us now. Better speak to him.
This moment, okay?
Sì. No, non ho sentito, scusi. Non ho sentito.
Ho detto solo aspettare un attimo.
Sì, va bene. Poi c'è il parcheggio della funivia da qualche parte, cioè...
Noi... La funivia è giù.
Però...
Se vuole girare per tornare indietro, io la faccio girare, come vuole.
No, perché ci sono le indicazioni... Ah, parte... No, perché... Noi in teoria dovremmo essere lì dove c'è il parcheggio della...
Well, I think we better turn that offline because there's going to be some expletives in a minute.
That's a fucked up day, that's it. I didn't do anything.
So you're not very happy?
I'm fucked.
You don't want to talk?
I'm just fucked, you know? Oh. Just suffered. Suffered.
Hello, Daniel.
Hi, Richard.
Hello, Lionel.
Buongiorno, Richard.
Buongiorno. Well, we were played in there with a little flavour of our Italian adventure last year, Giro d'Italia. First time we'd ever covered the Giro d'Italia daily. We're preparing to do that again this year. Where are we just now, though, Daniel?
We are in a real Italian or Italo-Londinese institution, which is Italiuno. For my money, the only real... authentic Italian cafe in London, the only one that I know anyway.
Well,
I've been coming here for about 20 years to watch bike races, watch football matches, know the owner Felice quite well.
I suggested that we meet in another better known place, maybe more slightly more commercial place.
I rubbished it, didn't I?
You did rubbish it, which surprised me because I thought that was authentic.
This used to be the only place you could watch Milan San Remo on TV, like
in the world.
If you lived in the southeast of England, before it was routinely on Eurosport, I can remember coming in and watching it on Italian TV. They'd have Rai on here.
I can watch Milan San Remo here in 2009 with Ellis Bacon and Daniel Freib. The result of that day, unfortunately, sent Daniel into a state of shock because he'd been working with Mark Cavendish on his autobiography, and Cavendish only popped up and won the race. The book was out a few weeks later, and Daniel was having palpitations.
The book was finished, or as good as finished, but that result meant that I had to scurry off and write another few thousand words.
I wouldn't tell Cavendish this, and I'm sure he won't be listening, but you weren't best pleased with his win at Milan San Remo, I think it's fair to say. Anyway, listen, we're going to be looking ahead to the 100th Giro d'Italia during this Friends special. We're going to try and cover lots of elements of the Giro story, the Italian story. You have far more experience of the Giro than we do, Daniel. I think last year was the first year Lionel and I have certainly covered the race to the extent that we did. When was the first year you went on the Giro?
The first year I covered the Giro, I think, was probably 2001. The first time my first memories of the Giro from the late 90s, I got into cycling fairly late. In England, it used to be very difficult to follow it. There were a couple of lines of brief news in my parents used to buy the Independent newspaper, and I became a Pavel Tonkov supporter. He was riding for, at that time, I think he was still at Panaria in 1997, but I followed the battle between Ivan Gotti and Pavel Tonkov via the two lines of brief news every day in the Independent. And then the following year, I was doing my A-levels, and fortunate to have quite a lot of time off supposedly revising, but I was mostly watching what I still consider to be the greatest Grand Tour I've ever seen, the 1998 Giro d'Italia. Probably not that memorable for other people, but because it was the first one, I think I followed wall to wall, and there's this fantastic battle between Marco Pantani and Pavel Tonkov. Again, I was a big Tonkov fan. And they just seemed to spend hours and hours and hours glued to each other's wheel. In the Dolomites in particular, and it just seemed to be mountain stage after mountain stage after mountain stage, and it really was it encapsulated perfectly what the Giro was about, what I felt it should be about, the fantastic mountains, the fantastic scenery, incredible passion, obviously, because Pantani was the home hero, the home favourite. He'd never won the Giro at that point, and the whole of Italy just seemed to be in raptures, really, and on the edge of their seat for the whole 3 weeks following Pantani. So, that was my first really memorable experience of the Giro.
Lionel?
Well, it's very similar kind of experience, but a decade or so earlier, I followed the 1987 Giro, which Stephen Roach won ahead of his Carrera teammate Roberto Vicentini, in a very similar way, just a few lines in the newspaper and then buying Cycling Weekly once a week. And even Cycling Weekly's coverage couldn't do justice to that great battle between teammates that went on. It wasn't really until Stephen Roach's book came out, the one that he did with David Walsh, The Agony and the Ecstasy, which explained this kind of the way that the Carrera team was split. I was going to say down the middle. It really wasn't down the middle. On one side, it was Stephen Roach, his teammate Eddie Schapers, a Belgian, and his soigneur, Patrick Valcke. And on the other side, Vicentini, the team manager, Boy Fava, who was trying to broker some kind of peace, and all the Italians. And it was a kind of a... It struck me immediately that the Giro d'Italia is not the same as... It's not just an Italian version of the Tour de France. It felt different. When I saw footage of the race, it looked completely different. In your mind's eye, you see the mountains in the early part of the summer, often sort of icy walls on the roadside. It doesn't feel like the height of the cycling summer in the same way the Tour de France does. I think it's got a great deal of additional charm because of that. The following year with Andy Hampstead's victory, followed that
say,
closely.
I mean, 87 was also the first one I was really aware of, mainly because Robert Miller was second in that year's race, which a lot of people forget. But the following year, as you mentioned, Andy Hampstead won a race famous for the weather, the extreme weather, the snow-lined Gavia Pass, which almost brought a halt to proceedings. Hampstead, this quite gentle, polite American guy, not necessarily in the mold of Giro champions somehow, but he was the first and to this day remains the only American winner. You mentioned the Roach victory. We will be playing the story of that Giro as a friend special coming up very soon with Roach himself giving his version of events. We've not finished putting that together yet, but that will be the inside story of the 87 Giro, and that's coming up during this year's race.
Daniel, the thing that I kind of noticed as I was getting used to finding out a little bit about the Giro and its history was that yes, Eddie Merckx and Fausto Coppi and Bernardino had won. The name's very familiar to the Tour de France, but also it seemed a much more parochial event. And even up until really the early 2000s, it was still a race where you could see riders, particularly Italian riders, but not necessarily just Italian riders, who would ride the Giro and do very well in it and yet not transfer across to the Tour de France at all. and it's really only in the very recent years that it's become much more of a global grand tour to try and kind of rival the Tour de France.
Yeah, I think this 100th edition comes at a very interesting and delicate point in the Giro's history, because we've seen a lot of efforts on the part of RCS Sport, the organisers and the Giro, to become more global. And they've been forced to become more global by the way the sport has moved in the last few years. And I think it's been, to a large extent, or to some extent, a success. However, they leave behind, as you say, Lionel, this almost 100 years of history when the race did seem quite different, and it was really a celebration of everything that it meant to be Italian and this great heritage that Italy has in cycling, not just cycle racing, but cycling in terms of building bikes and, you know, component manufacturers, and this fantastic tradition that Italy has. And, you know, you say, Lionel, it was very parochial. You go back even 20, 30 years, some of the great stars of Italian cycling barely ever raced the Tour de France. Francesco Moser rode one of the icons of the Giro, rode the Tour de France once, won the white jersey, never returned. Giuseppe Saronni, his big rival in the 1980s, also I think only rode the Tour de France once. And you know, as recently as the late 90s, you had 16, 17 out of 20, 21 Italian teams on the start line. And as I say, that's obviously had to change in recent years, and you know, this is something that obviously preoccupies the organizer and preoccupies the chief of the Giro d'Italia, Mauro Vegni in particular. I actually had a conversation with him about precisely this subject in Abu Dhabi, which is another race that RCS organizes now, the Abu Dhabi Tour, and this was just a few weeks ago.
Cosa volevo raccontare? Sicuramente non ciclismo.
What did I want to say with this Giro route in particular? What story did I want to tell? Well, it certainly wasn't just about cycling, even if, obviously, that's the heart of it. Cycling is the needle and thread, if you like, to weave and demonstrate something bigger, with an even more important message. That said, the cycling side obviously goes hand in hand with the more philosophical side. This means that the route has been designed in such a way as to involve the whole of Italy, and also with the aim of commemorating and celebrating the individuals who've brought glory to the country with their exploits in sport. Above all, though, what this 100th edition will hopefully convey in some way is the desire to be Italian, what we call Italianicity, which is very much valued abroad, but perhaps much less so in Italy. It's about this pride in being Italian, and the sense that we're a country that's loved and admired all over the world. In the 100th edition of the Giro, we wanted a route and a race that would tell the story of our country through cycling. The central theme was this idea of Italianicity, this idea of living all'italiana, which is something that gives us prestige and kudos in so many other countries, because we represent il bel paese, the beautiful land. We wanted to show the world a place with fantastic landscapes, culture, art, fashion, a country which has everything, but which we Italians ourselves don't fully appreciate sometimes. This is the story we want to tell, what it means to be Italian, what are we Italians like, what's our history, how many difficulties and disappointments we've endured, but what ability we have to get back up and to rise again. At the moment when we look as though we're about to breathe our last breath, that's when you see the Italian in us come to the fore. The Italian will wriggle out of trouble, the Italian will rise up, and the Italian will do it in a blaze of glory. This is what we wanted to show.
Come siamo noi italiani, che storia abbiamo dietro di noi, quante difficoltà, quante delusioni, ma quanta capacità di ripartire.